B-Pod Studios.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Checkpoint Daily. On today's episode, we'll be talking to Aaron Garst of Upcomer. He was on the ground at the Blizzard walkout. He's going to give us a look into everything that happened over that day. And also, in segment two, we'll be talking to Robin Gray, founder of Gaming Magazine. He's going to let us know some really cool LGBTQIA gamer events going on this month. This is Checkpoint Daily.
The latest esports and gaming news. Checkpoint XP Daily has got you covered. Find it online at checkpointxp.com. Get in the game.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Checkpoint Daily. As usual, your host, Norris Howard here. I'm joined alongside Weird Beard, and we are starting off with a guest, as you heard in the intro. We're going to be talking to Aaron Garst of Upcomer. He was present there at the walkout at Activision Blizzard, or at Blizzard in particular. And we just want to say, first of all, Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Norris.
Yeah, and obviously, as somebody who had boots on the ground, it was a very interesting and emotional day. Again, the second walkout we've seen at a major video game company in recent years. And I just want to ask, first and foremost, what was the overall energy like during the walkout? What, you know, were the employees in high spirits, low spirits? What was it like?
It was pretty. It felt pretty reserved. You know, it was like quiet. I was there. I got there early, probably like 8 a.m., something like that, just to survey the scene. There were already people out there, and it started flowing. You know, it started with 30, grew to 60, then probably grew to over 500 around that. But there wasn't a whole lot of talking. It was weird because nobody's working in the Activision Blizzard offices. Everyone's remote right now. Mm-hmm. This is like some employees, this is their first time visiting the office, was for this walkout. So it was like everyone was still kind of trying to feel the energy out. But you could tell there was a lot of people there that had specifically organized this, had put a ton of work in since the lawsuit came out. So you could feel the energy through them, and they were chanting, they were leading stuff. But overall, I think that reservedness isn't a bad thing. It kind of showed like a united front that you don't see from a lot of like companies like this, you know, when they do organized actions against, you know, the corporate office.
Now, my first question that I want to jump in on is, according to like the people that you were there and talking to, was it more of a solidarity action amongst the people, or more was it trying to send a message to management, to upper level people? Like, who were they trying to reach with this walkout?
They're definitely trying to reach management and trying to reach leadership, and that is a tough thing because like I spoke to some people, and like Bobby Kotick, like a lot of them, they don't view him as like this terrible bad guy. He's done a lot of bad things, and he's responsible for a lot of stuff, especially, you know, bringing in people like Fran Townsend and whatnot. But a lot of them, they just wanted to, like, I talked to them, they all had some sort of experiences of just like a bad culture. Like, even if it isn't sexism and a lot of this discrimination, it's just like terrible management, a lot of aggression, just like not feeling comfortable at work. So it was definitely like, we're tired of this. Like, this has been going on way more than just like Activision Blizzard proper. Like, it's in studios all over California and all over the world that are under their umbrella. And it was kind of like, we're done with this now. We're finally taking a movement. You know, we have like a big percentage of the employees who work at the company at this walkout right here. So it was promising. It definitely felt like they had been working at this a lot longer than they must have been, because they only started recently, but it was so organized. I felt like that message is going to get heard loud and clear.
Well, and I definitely, you alluded to it, but I definitely wanted to ask, was there a sense of the employees who were out during the walkout that they, you know, had personal knowledge of a lot of these things going on, or knew that it was maybe more widespread, even that the lawsuit alleges? Is there a feeling throughout that employee, you know, sort of cohort that, yeah, was kind of an open secret to begin with, or was there kind of a outrage at the lawsuit itself?
I don't think it's hard for me to speak like to the employee mindset, or even right. even if there is a wider one. I think a lot of people, they all understood what was happening, maybe not to the degree that it was happening, the stuff we've seen, like, you know, with the Cosby suite and some of that really terrible stuff that you seem come out in the last few days. But the lawsuit kind of just pushed them out. I think the lawsuit, like, once the state of California is suing your company, that gives a lot of validation to to the thoughts that you've been maybe having. I mean, a lot of people, I'm sure, and I was told this by some employees there, like they had felt that discrimination, they'd experienced it, they had seen it firsthand, happening to their coworkers and happening to themselves. But you know, at that point, I mean, I don't know if you've ever had a workplace, if you've gone through something like that, but it's hard. Like, you're not gonna, it's hard. You can't just go and start talking about it openly. Like, you're gonna feel incredibly uncomfortable, which is just shitty corporate culture, you know, which is probably most offices in America. But like the lawsuit was finally like, all right, once the state of California is suing you, like, I can back that up now. Like, I have a whole state with me.
Now, one of the other big things that came out is that Activision Blizzard has now retained a company that's known for being union busters. You know, they come through and really are kind of shitting on unions and people organizing. How close, in your opinion, do you think we are to having talks of unionization within not only Activision Blizzard? And do you think that that's going to carry over to any other gaming companies like Ubisoft that have been, you know, involved in stuff
under
like this?
Fire?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's really hard to say. Like, I'm all for unionization. I want that to happen as soon as possible. We are seeing it, you know, happen on a greater scale with things like, you know, Frito-Lay that happened.
Yeah.
I think this week, you know, they're taking action against, you know, PepsiCo. But with the video game industry, it's so weird, because I definitely felt that, you know, the Activision, I can't say anything for sure. It still feels like we're pretty far away from unionization at any level, because I think it needs to happen at a studio by studio level. And I think the priority for some of the Activision and Blizzard employees is to fix what's wrong right now. And there's so much wrong right now.
Yeah, totally.
And one of the methods is the unionization, but they may just be trying to directly, like, management, fix this, or we're going to keep causing problems for you, which
right.
is the best way to do it. You know, like, I think they said that, like, no work is happening with World of Warcraft right now just because of what's happening.
And, you know, the last thing that I want to ask is, you know, did you hear of any plans of any continued action? Were there plans for any other walkouts or any other employee demonstrations that we could look forward to in the future? Or was there a sentiment that, you know, we hope this is it and everything else can get settled in the courts?
Yeah, I can't say anything for sure. I don't really want to say anything for sure, but I definitely hope that there is more. And I think that there will be more employee action, but I think right now the ball is in Activision's court. Right now they've been refusing to play in any form. Like, they had PR at the event, and their response was just, you know, it wasn't good. It was just the typical corporate, like, we're all for an inclusive environment and whatnot. And you saw, like, their tone deaf. Even Kotick called their response tone deaf. And this whole – their response has gone from tone deaf to bad to awful. You know, going from this weird letters and weird responses from Found Tencent to Kotick's vague letter that doesn't really commit to anything. And then to them hiring this firm, like you said, is known for union busting, has worked with Amazon and stuff like that. So – like, they're only going in the wrong direction. That's why I can't see how, if these organizers are serious, like, how there wouldn't be more in the future.
All right. Well, Aaron Garce, you heard it, writer for Upcomer, as well as you've seen his pieces all over the place, including places like Vice and others. Aaron, thank you so much for joining us on the show. And, you know, if there is something else, we hope to hear back from you.
Definitely. Thanks for having me, both of you. Appreciate it.
All right. We're going to have more coming up on Checkpoint Daily, so make sure you guys...
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Stick around.
Bring the heat. Share your thoughts on socials with us at Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter. You could even be featured on tomorrow's show.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Checkpoint. Checkpoint Daily, only the most bestest show about esports and video games. Your host, Norris Howard, here. We're bringing in Chad Callahan into the studio as well now. He wasn't here in part one, but he's here for part two.
Yeah, part one's a little rough for me, so I want to come for the fun part.
I understand. Don't forget that the search for the next Rocket League team is still on. Go to BeasleyEsports.gg/Rocket League, where you and two friends can sign up for some qualifiers to get to a final tournament where the winner will be offered three professional Rocket League contracts. So make sure you guys head on over to BeasleyEsports.gg/Rocket League. Those qualifiers, by the way, August 7th and 8th. So get on
next week.
Next week. You got to get on it.
You got a week.
Yep. Now, we are joined by a very special guest. We have Robin Gray, co-founder of Gray Jones Media, as well as founder of Gaming Magazine. Gaming, emphasis on that first syllable.
Emphasis on gay.
Emphasis on that first syllable. Robin, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you. And yeah, it's definitely gaming with a Y, because it's hella gay.
Yeah, which I hella appreciate. Actually, let's talk about Gaming Magazine a bit. Could you tell us what Gaming Magazine is for those who may have not heard of it?
Sure. So Gaming Magazine is the world's only LGBTQ video game magazine. We are literally the one and only.
Which is funny, because you think that it seems
that's shocking.
When did you start Gaming Magazine? A few years ago?
Yeah, so 2019.
Yeah.
So it was the 1st of June 2019. We kind of launched it at the start of Pride Month because, you know.
That makes sense.
And no, it's a really fun story because we, way back in, I think it was February 2019, I was having a drink in a pub, British, of course.
Yeah.
So it's a pub. With a friend of mine who knew somebody who worked in the video games industry, and they were sort of like really encouraging to us to do more about LGBT video games. We run, as you say, I'm the co-founder of Gray Jones Media, so we're an LGBT media company that runs four magazines and produces TV shows and podcasts and whatever.
Oh, wow.
So we had some places to put queer video game content. So my initial thought was, okay, we'll just put video game content, we'll do some more video game content. I'm a gamer, it kind of made sense. And then kind of I sat on the train home and I was sort of thinking, well, okay, so somebody else must be doing this. Somebody else must be doing this in this space. And really quickly, it became a really obvious thing that there was nobody else doing it. Now, I'm not taking it away. There's some brilliant work being done by some of the mainstream game magazines. There's been some brilliant work done by some of the some of the LGBT magazines that occasionally touch on video games. But it was always really kind of top level trivial headlines. Oh, this character's gay. End of discussion.
Right. Mm. Yeah. So
kind of meaty kind of media, like really proper journalism underpinning it. And I think that's where we sort of saw an opportunity. And about 5 months later, gaming was born.
Awesome.
Wow. That, you know, that is a great story because it's something that you don't think about. You think everything's been done. Like, I feel like that's the mantra now. It's like, well, you're just repeating what mm-hmm. someone else has done. But it's nice when you can actually find a genuine thing that's never been done and you can kind of break in into what you guys started.
Theoretically, we were the second, I believe. But we're the current one that's only operating at the moment.
Okay.
I don't know all the background. I've only ever really picked up on the gossip of it, but I tend to take gossip with a little bit of a pinch of salt because you're never quite sure who's telling the story,
right,
as to whether it's reliable or not. There was, way back when, a magazine called The Gamer, G-A-Y-M-E-R. And the problem was, I think, that they existed as a community magazine for a year or so. My understanding is then the person that ran it decided to trademark the word gamer. And then tried to send a cease and desist to the Reddit group that was all about gamers.
Oh, no.
They all chucked $10 in the pot, rose up, sued his ass, and shut him down.
So
moral of the story, don't try and take a word away from somebody that's been using it for a very long time, a lot longer than your magazine.
That is, yeah, that's a shame. Especially because all those people could have been great marketing, first off, because everyone would have thought that was your Reddit. And they could have been loyal readers and listeners.
Yeah. And in a nutshell, that's kind of that was the one lesson we took from that, was the fact that gaming was a word that we were lovingly borrowing from the community in full respect. And also, we exist to serve. Like, right. It's not a... We, from the get-go, have been about supporting the IRL gamer groups based all around the world. We've done loads of promo, obviously, in the before times when people could actually meet up and do stuff.
What's that? I don't even know what that is.
And I think it's offering that support out to the community. We feature streamers on almost a weekly basis, and to kind of celebrate the communities they build around them. And I think that's where we've generated such love and support. So literally in the space of just a touch over 2 years now, we've gone from a standing start to now reaching 850,000 people a month.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I actually wanted to ask a little bit about streaming, because from the outside looking in, it seems like streaming has been something that has been incredibly, incredibly, you know, integral to the furthering of LGBTQIA causes. Obviously, Twitch, YouTube, and all the rest of them have all the special superfluous flair that you're allowed to put on your profiles. But I do want to ask, you know, being a gamer and also being LGBTQ, what is one of the things that you think, you know, the gaming community has improved on? Has streaming helped, or has it really opened a lot of old wounds with harassment and things of that nature?
It's yes to both. To be honest with you, the answer is yes to both of those questions. It's both been a hindrance and it's been a huge benefit. I think personally the benefits outweigh the hindrances. I think that, particularly as you say, that the beauty of LGBTQIA plus streamers is not so much the games that they're playing, but the community and the support network they put in place for their community around them. I've been privileged in this job to really get to know a lot of streamers, and I now understand the magic of streaming isn't about the games that they're playing. It's about the fact that there's a great streamer here in the UK called Ready Set Ben, who literally will stop a game if one of his community says, "Oh, I've had a bit of a rough day." He will stop his game and they will all sit there and just talk and really support that person. And I think that is the beauty of it, because we're all, as city-dwelling queer people, we can all go to our gay bars, we can all go to our community centers, but the people that come to the streams who live in the middle of nowhere in a red state, or live in parts of England that are still quite backward, or even in countries where being LGBTQIA plus is illegal, by offering that support and that network, I genuinely think they're saving lives.
I 100% agree.
Yeah, and I think just on your second point about around harassment, honestly, and this is going to sound slightly cruel, but this is not me saying it. This is actually me parroting what a lot of vast sort of streamers that we've worked with have said. It's kind of it's really bad. I'm putting this out there now. It's appalling. However, I think a lot of those streamers would do it every day and face that every day and take it on their shoulders to help their community. And I am thoroughly proud of them for that. Harassment is a bad thing. Twitch is doing good work in that world. I think there's plenty more that can be done. But I think that the harassment is almost worth it to support and provide that a level of support to the queer community.
Yeah. On the topic of streamers, I want to brighten up the mood, because you guys have something going on called DigiPride, which I will be on Sunday,
well
by
done.
The way. So if you guys want to listen to that, go to twitch.tv/gamingmag, or is
that's the one? Yep.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure. Yeah. twitch.tv/gamingmag, GAYMING. So you can listen on Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern time. And 9 p.m. UK time. Did I get that right?
That's right, yeah.
And master plug.
Look at you, mathematics.
1 p.m. Pacific as well.
Oh, okay. There we go. You got it all figured out. But I want to talk about what you guys have been doing, because it's been a big project. You guys have been doing this for like a couple months now, and you have some major sponsors behind it, including like Xbox and people like that. So could you give us a little taste of DigiPride, and could you tell us about the event and how it began?
Yeah, sure. So it began last year. As a response, obviously, to the pandemic. So we last year were meant to be doing a Pride series around the UK. So we were going to be basically taking gaming on tour, because we do, or did in the past tense, do live events back when, again, that was possible. With gaming, we had gaming live, but we were going to take it on tour in 2020 around people's pride, around cities and their pride events. But in the end, we just had to pivot away and spend 3 months doing some wonderful things online. And then, yes, absolutely, this year we were ready and prepared for it, and we really amped it up to 100. The reason we do it over 3 months is quite simple. It started, obviously, the fact that it's very much an American thing to have Pride Month, that, yeah. and saying June and done. In the UK, the city that I live in Birmingham in the Midlands, our Pride is in May. London Pride is in July, Manchester, August. So it's a very American thing to say June is Pride Month. In the UK, it's kind of smudged out a little bit over the summer. So, and it's also a way of pushing back, actually, about this whole notion of Pride Month. I find it hilarious, and it's a pastime of mine, quite sadly, to sort of sit and monitor gaming companies that literally on the midnight, 1 minute past midnight on the 1st of July, you literally see all the rainbows being torn down and put away for another day on their
oh, yeah. You see that not even just with Pride Month. You see it with every of those, national,
every quote-unquote month, Black History Month,
Breast Awareness, all those.
Women's
all
Month,
those.
All that.
So I think for us, it was kind of like making a statement that Pride is not a month, it's a season. Well, Pride is 365, obviously, but right. For us, it's a season. I can't do this 12 months.
It's a lot of work.
I have other stuff to do. So this year's one, absolutely what you said. So it's presented by Xbox. It's sponsored by 2K, Mediatonic, Sega, Sold Out Games, and Wizards of the Coast. And I'm eternally grateful to those wonderful companies for sort of showing up and showing out and really kind of supporting it. I'm also super proud of the fact that we've managed to convince a lot of those companies to keep their rainbows up going past the end of June as well. Specifically the UK and Europe accounts, because obviously we're actually working only with the UK and Europe accounts on this one.
Yeah.
But of course it's benefiting the global queer community. But 3 months. We've already done some fantastic things. We had a digital drag show from the wonderful Bitch Pudding back in June. We had a number of DigiPride panels. We did a great Queer Voices in Games panel in June as well. This week, just gone, talking about the magic of streaming, we had a panel of the Stream Queens. So we had five of the wonderful Stream Queens joining us, which is a big, massive streaming drag troupe. Of fantastic people. So we had five of them on the stream Wednesday of this week, just gone. We've got competitions. People who are listening to this who live in the UK and Ireland can go and enter a competition to win an Xbox Series S.
Ooh.
And one of the Pride controllers that's not available to buy. If you're not living in the UK and Ireland, sorry.
You're SOL.
You can go and enter our Sega competition instead, that includes a Steam code that unlocks every single Sega game.
Wow.
That's 760.
That's pretty huge.
Nora's perked up when he heard that.
Yes, sounds pretty cool.
So you can go to gamemag.com/competitions.
Perfect.
And enter all of those competitions as well. Make a note of that.
Awesome, yeah. Go over to gamingmag.com. You can find all their information and things like that there. Go ahead.
If you go to gamingmag.com/digipride, that acts as like a little hub of everything that's going on as well. So
amazing.
Yeah. And we've got one more thing that I can't talk about it yet, because I haven't been given the get-go by, and I'm going to be honest, it's by Wizards of the Coast.
Oh.
So you can kind of see where this might be going.
Yeah.
But I cannot confirm or deny anything at this point.
I can
talk about it.
Could I say there are maybe two D's in it? And you don't have the answer, but that's just my theory.
Allegedly. Okay. Well, allegedly. Well, we want to thank you, Robin Gray, for coming into the show. Again, founder of Gaming Magazine. As you heard, all of the social handles and websites you guys need to go and participate with this really cool event. As you heard, our own Chad Callahan will be there, as we like to call him here, Chad-a-like Escalade.
Yep.
That is what he will be performing under. I'm joking.
That might be my drag name.
There you go.
That's a great drag name.
Anyway,
on Sunday and throw some dollars.
Yes.
Make sure you guys check it out. There'll be great conversations, great streamers, and all of that. So if you are an LGBTQ gamer, make sure you guys check it out. And if you're not, just hang out. Just come say, hey, why not?
If you just want to talk to me.
Just want to talk and hang out, go ahead and check it out. But Robin, we thank you again for coming onto the show.
No, thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
And that's going to be it for today's Checkpoint Daily. Don't forget to check out all of this cool stuff we talk about wherever you get your podcast, as well as over at our website, checkpointxp.com. For Chad Callahan, Weird Beer, Robbie Landis, and myself, your host, Norris Howard, we will see you all next week.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.